A beloved loony legend has left us, but it's not all sad news, as Coyote versus Acme, the film, is still being screened and could still possibly come out. So, of course, you realize this means podcast.
Are you ready, eager young space cadet?
Meep, meep.
I saw a
pussycat. Love is the limit.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
Hello, and welcome to Of Course You Realize This Means Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Graves, and with me today, it is a pleasure to bring to you screenwriter and TV writer, animation enthusiast, and just all-around comedic fun guy, Jordan Morris, who has a new graphic novel that he's working on coming out later this year. Jordan, welcome to the show, and how are you doing this morning?
Hi, I'm doing great. I actually love being introduced as all-around comedic fun guy. I am going to insist on being introduced that way for future podcasts. All around, you know, that is such a, you know, when you're a creative person these days, you do a lot of different stuff. You podcast, you work on TV, you work in some other stuff, and I think all-around comedic fun guy, that really gets at it. Thank you so much for this wonderful title.
You're welcome. Of course. Yeah. So you are a podcaster as well.
Yes.
And you've worked with some really fun YouTube channels.
In the YouTube space. That's how I say YouTube. Yeah. I did a little freelance writing for the Screen Junkies back in the day. And you can still see me semi-regularly on Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link. I worked for them for a bit and established a couple recurring jokes that were still recurring to this day.
Fantastic. I touched on it briefly. I just wanted to highlight the passing of Cass Warner, the beloved, you know, one of the Warner sisters, if you will. She co-authored the book The Brothers Warner, and she had developed a lot of film and TV projects with the studio and was the granddaughter of Jack Warner. And so I want to, you know, these living legends, they're still with us. And the generations that they are attached to have such a wealth of knowledge. And if you ever get to sit down with somebody like that, I think you should definitely take the opportunity. They have a lot of insight into how the business was run back in the day. And if you haven't read The Brothers Warner, I highly recommend it. It is currently available at the WB Studio Store, which is really cool. But I'm sure you can find it on Amazon and everywhere like that. Did you ever get to meet Cass Warner, by the way?
No, I didn't. And I'm thrilled to hear about this book, actually. As someone who's such a big fan of Warner Brothers stuff, I guess I don't know too much about the history of the studio and the family. So yeah, that's great to hear that there's a book out there. And yeah, that's such a cool way to like remember somebody is through, you know, recommending and recirculating their book. That's awesome. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, send condolences to the entire family and friends. I know people personally who had just met her because she was doing a signing a couple of months back. And I'm sure it's just devastating to lose someone like that. But, you know, we wish everyone the best and we hope that the healing starts and, you know, just know that she lived a wonderful life. And yeah, what more can you ask for?
What an awesome legacy. And yeah, seems like and sounds like she lived a really long, cool life and left behind lots of awesome stuff. So that's great. I mean, yeah, obviously, like, we love Warner Brothers stuff. It's all over and it probably will, you know, it'll outlive us all. So yeah, what a cool legacy to leave behind.
So something that we hope lives on is this film, Coyote versus Acme. Have you heard about it? Do you know anything about the drama that's going on around it?
I do. I've been following it. I had a literal dream about it last night.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay, do tell.
Yeah, and maybe because I knew we had this recording coming up and it was on my mind. But in my dream, I was scrolling through my like Twitter feed and saw that in my dream, this is not actually happening, by the way, before people start buying plane tickets.
Disclaimer,
this is my dream. I cannot predict the future. I don't know. I saw that there's a theater out here called the New Beverly that does like classic movie screenings and stuff like that. And in my dream, yeah, the New Beverly was showing Coyote versus Acme as part of like a viral, you know, thing to actually get it released. So yeah, I have hope. I'm so excited to hopefully see this movie someday. That's so cool that, like, I didn't know until she started stumping for it that Sammy Birch was the screenwriter. I loved May December. I thought May December was a hoot. So yeah, I would be so excited to see this movie. I mean, who wouldn't? If you're listening to this podcast, you know, you're probably so stoked on it. So yeah, consider me amongst the people who are really stoked to see it. And yeah, hopefully it happens. I guess it's reassuring that we're still talking about it, you know, X amount of months later, because yeah, it's been a story for so long. So hopefully the fact that it is an ongoing story and people still care means that it'll come out at some point. I've talked to a couple of people who have seen it, and they all kind of corroborate what you hear, and that it's like funny and surprisingly emotional, and all the performances are awesome, and all those great Looney Tunes characters show up. So yeah, I can't wait. If the new Beverly actually starts showing it, I'll be out there with a deck chair waiting for my ticket.
I hope that dream is prophetic, because Quentin Tarantino is a huge Looney Tunes fan. So if anyone was going to screen it like that, it would be him.
Yeah, he's the owner of the New Beverly and a couple other old movie theaters here in L.A. So yes, Quentin, you can do it. We believe in you.
Yeah, just give them the $35 million, however much they're asking for, and you know, screen it at your theater.
You got it. Quentin's got it.
If this finally ever does come out, I think that a lot of people are going to be surprised, and it will also rejuvenate the franchise in a new way. And I think that would be really exciting, especially for us fans listening and promoting Release Coyote versus Acme every which way we can. But a new quote has come out, and she was talking about May December again. And she said, as far as I know, it's ongoing. I think we're all pretty heartbroken about it. We hope it will somehow find its home and not end up stuck in a vault for the rest of time. That would be a great resolution. They are still screening it. They are still pushing for it to be released, which is fantastic news. That brings us to the last news article, which is Tiny Toons University is back. Season 2 dropped two Fridays ago, and it is better than season 1. A lot of people are saying that they love the writing in this second batch of episodes. It's only 5 currently, and they are set to premiere on Cartoon Network on April 6th at 9 a.m., so set your alarms. But currently, you can watch them streaming on Max. So I know you're a fan of Tiny Toons growing up. Did you have a ball just jumping into this world? And what was it like writing for Buster and Babs?
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah. I mean, dream come true. Like, literal childhood dream come true. I loved the Tiny Toons growing up. I have a special affection for the like movie that they did. I don't think it was released in theaters. The How I Spent My Summer Vacation.
It's so good.
It's so funny. I think we had it on VHS and we just watched it into the ground, my sister and I. I can still, you know, I still sing the Happy World Land music. Part of the plot is Plucky going with Hampton's family to Happy World Land, which is like a really like terrible amusement park. Happy World Land, where the fun doesn't stop for only $80 a pop. Great joke. Yeah, I was such a fan of Tiny Toons growing up. Oh, great NES game for Tiny Toons. Did you ever play the NES game? Little platformer. So fun.
There were so many little Tiny Toons platformers that were incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Buster Breaks Loose. And yeah, I mean, the list goes on. I think there's like 5 good ones, but all by Namco, or the same company did them all. And it's just like, where's this? Like,
I know.
Bring that back.
That'll
bring back good games like that.
Oh, gosh. I know. I would love to see a little re-release of those. Oh. But yeah, no, I mean, that just assures that a kid is going to become obsessed with something when there's like a TV show and also a video game that like just ensures that you're like, oh, I'm obsessed with this for life. This is imprinting on me. So yeah, when I heard it was getting rebooted, I was just like so stoked as a fan. And then something I was super stoked about is I heard that some old like comedy colleagues were going to be involved in it. Aaron Gibson, who I did Upright Citizens Brigade improv and sketch with when I first moved to L.A. I don't know exactly what her title is. I'm going to say showrunner.
She's the Yeah, she's the co-showrunner with Nate Cash.
Nice.
Nate Cash.
And obviously, I like think Erin is so funny. She's so amazing. She's got a great podcast. Yes. She's always been one of my favorite funny people. And I'm like, oh, great call, Warner Brothers. That's like exactly the kind of person you need to kind of refresh Tiny Toons. And then I think a little bit later in the writing process, she brought on my good friend and another UCB collaborator from back in the day, Allison Becker, who I think is so funny, a great writer, but also one of those, that actor from That Thing does a lot of commercials. She was like a recurring local weirdo in Parks and Rec. She was like the local newspaper reporter.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, okay. She is like a really, really funny actor and also a great writer. Two talents. Can you imagine having two talents? I can't. But yeah, so.
Yeah, such a great cast.
Oh, the voice cast, I know.
And it's just got so much energy, so much liveliness. And I'm assuming modern comedy writing is a lot different than what it was back in the day. And so can you talk about writing on a show that is very in your face with its punches?
Yeah. I mean, I think that like Warner Brothers stuff and like definitely Tiny Toons and Animaniacs like did such a great job of incorporating like current pop culture to the point where like if you go back and watch them now, sometimes there's an element of like, wait, who was that? Was that character that walked through supposed to be Eric Roberts, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously animation takes a couple of years to get from script to screen. So, you know, even then some of the references are like, yeah, you can't be so up to date. Like, I guess South Park they can make in a long weekend. But,
right. You
know, yeah. So, but I think they tried to be as current as they possibly could. Yeah. And I think with Tiny Toons, and I'll like maybe clarify my role in it a little bit. I wrote a couple freelance episodes for them. I wasn't there in the writing room. I wasn't there in the like pitch or anything like that. But I mean, I talked to them a little bit about what they kind of wanted to achieve with the show. And I think they did want it to, you know, walk that line of being like, for adult fans our age, but also like something kids could watch. Cause I think sometimes the reboots and the refreshes, they swing one way a little harder than they swing the other way. So
sure.
I think that like, you know, they wanted it to be, you know, a like respectful return to the show that people our age love, but also like, you know, you want to get a new generation of kids into this. So I
think, of course.
Yeah, so I think they did want to make them seem like modern teens/young adults. So I think that they do like use some modern slang and they do like act a little bit more like they're from 2024. Because I think you could do like a 90s throwback version of Tiny Toons and it would probably be really hilarious. But, you know, you might lose some. You know, you might lose some new viewers that way.
Sure.
Although maybe not. I don't know. Who doesn't love the 90s, right? Like, who doesn't love to remember the 90s?
Yeah, everything's got to be updated, though. And the way that they use the characters and they have these cutaways to their faces and they're doing the memes. Like, what I'm thinking about specifically is, like, Plucky having really beady eyes and, like, a really big expression on his beak. And, like, that kind of thing. I think that goes far for kids. And obviously, the internet culture that we're in, people are just going to take screen grabs of that and then plug in whatever they're, thinking over that kind of overlay.
I do love how expressive they are. It's such a cartoony cartoon. And I think cartoony cartoons are definitely like fewer and far between these days. And like Looney Tunes still work great for memes. Like, Big Chungus, you know, like you could turn on your favorite social media right now and find 10 funny Big Chungus memes because like they're so expressive. And that's why SpongeBob makes such a great meme. It's just pure emotion. You know what he's feeling at all times. You know, me after too much coffee. Right. Like,
yes,
these things work so well for it just because like the cartooning is so brilliant. And I really like that is an aspect of this show. I like that, like, even though it is modern and, you know, you still have some like modern slang and modern ideas, like it's classic cartoon. It's a classic Warner Brothers cartoon. And like the characters still kind of like move and behave and emote like those old cartoons. I think that's just such a great part of the show.
Yeah, and most recently they incorporated the celebrity parodies with with Plucky being obsessed with the tabloids magazine and going through and looking at the different mashups of celebrities and animals, which is, I thought, was really funny and a really great callback to the 90s series. For those who are uninitiated and don't know who Big Chungus is, that is Bugs Bunny imitating Elmer Fudd from Wabbit Trouble all the way back from 1940. So, like, you know, that is a really fun callback, but that has taken on a meme of its own, if you will, and he's everywhere. But speaking of cartoony cartoons, you have worked on a slew of them. You have Teen Titans Go, Unikitty, most recently Jellystone, which just dropped its third season. So these characters have been in your repertoire so far as vehicles for comedy. Which characters do you associate with the most or like are easiest to write?
Oh, sure. Great question. Yeah. So the episode of Tiny Toons, one of the episodes that I did, is that episode you mentioned where Plucky is looking at all the tabloids. We also get Marvin the Martian in that one.
I love Marvin in that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of an old man Logan type story where Marvin is old and broken and then spoiler alert, gets his groove back and goes on a space adventure.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's honestly so good.
Oh, thanks. I really love how it turned out. It was so fun to do. And yeah, and those celebrity parodies you mentioned, those were so fun to come up with. Alison Becker and I jammed on those together. And I think some of them were Aaron Gibson's too. So yeah, I cannot take credit for Fox J. Michael. I think that's one of the funniest ones in there. And I think that was an Alison Becker. But yeah, those animal celebrities were like a blast to come up with. I think we probably have like 50 unused ones that didn't make it into the episode. So
Fantastic. Hopefully if
there's more Tiny Toons at some point, we see some of those animal celebrities.
Can you give the listeners just a peek at one of them that may have left it on the cutting room floor?
Let me see if I could remember. I don't know if I have it in front of me. If at some point I find it, I'll email it over to you and you can read them on air.
Perfect.
Yeah, but I mean, I like Plucky is so funny. I think that the modern, Luniversity version of Plucky is like a hilarious like update of him. I like that he's just like preening, high status jerk, basically. I love a high status jerk. I love a Danny McBride character. You know, even though he is like a high status jerk and hard to get along with, like he and Buster and Hampton are like still friends, you know, like that friendship is still there. And like, even though he's annoying and even though they get on each other's nerves, like they are friends at the end of the episode. And I think that's such a nice part of the show is like the characters can have conflict, but like, They're friends, and I think that's something I always like to try and do with my casts of characters is to like make it so they can have conflict and they can fight and they can be funny at each other, but you know, you do want them to be friends at the end of the day, and you do want people to like understand why they're a unit, you know, not just that they like got smushed together somehow, but they do have a connection that's like fun to see. So yeah, I appreciate that they really wanted to do that with Luniversity, is to make sure that like the friendship stayed believable.
1,000%. And it is believable. And I love whenever they have scenes together, but just, I got to give it up for a friend of the podcast, David Arago Jr., who brings life to both Plucky and Hampton in this.
Yeah.
And just that dual role of being so sweet and innocent with Hampton and then just being the out and out jerk with Plucky. I don't know how he does it, but he does it so well. And it's, yeah, it comes off in the writing. It comes off in the characterization. And it's so funny to watch. Anytime Plucky is the butt of the joke, it always gets me.
Yeah. I think it might even be the first episode of Luniversity. They're doing some sort of talent show. And you cut to Plucky and he's wearing the Natalie Portman outfit from Black Swan.
Yes.
I have not laughed that hard at a car. I had nothing to do with that. I was just enjoying that episode as a fan. And yeah, that to me is such a hilarious joke and such a great example of like how this modern Plucky is like a little bit different.
And transitioning over to Jellystone, I'm sure you're a fan of those characters as well. And Top Cat has really surprised me with the antics that come around for his family and, you know, all of the cats associated with that franchise and all of the little groupings. Like you have Yogi Bear, and now we have the Jetsons coming in. We had a cameo of Scooby-Doo in the gang. Like, have you worked with your, like, goal of working with a IP yet? Or is there another IP that's out there that you haven't touched on yet? And what IP brought you the most joy to work on within Jellystone?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I'll talk about Jellystone a little bit. And yeah, and I think you hit on something that I think is a core part of the show, in that, like, it's a lot of little shows. Like, I think that's how the creator, C.H. Greenblatt, when I got the job, that's kind of how he described it to me. It's like, okay, it's all these little sitcoms that kind of happen within this bigger show. In, you know, this little town of Jellystone has all of these little sitcoms that happen in it. And it's like, you know, Megilla and Jabber working at the hat store. Like, that's its own little show. And Yogi and Boo Boo and Cindy at the hospital, that's its own little show. And of course, these characters kind of like mix up and mash up. But, you know, you kind of like start an episode with like, which of these little worlds are you starting in? And Top Cat and his gang being these kind of shifty scammers is its own little show. And yeah, I love their take on all these Hanna-Barbera characters. Tom Lennon is Top Cat. How funny is he? He's such a great VO performer. And
he's fantastic.
Such a fun use of him. And yeah, so that was a blast. And you know, like the Hanna-Barbera characters, like, have these great designs, and all those shows had great theme songs. But I think that's mostly what people remember about them, right? It's kind of like their vibes. Like, you know, I mean, diehards probably do, but like, just regular cartoon fans probably don't have a favorite Grape Ape episode, you know? Like, it's something you remember fondly, but I don't think it's been as rerun and re-obsessed over as, you know, the Looney Tunes. So yeah, it's a little more of a blank slate, and you can kind of just have fun with it. Like, you want to like recapture kind of what was fun about the character in general, but like, it's a little more loosey goose. And like, Jellystone is a crazy show. Like, if you haven't watched it yet, like, I think they're not super concerned about like plot or it making total sense. I think they just want it to be funny. And I love working on a show like that. Like, you know, I think with Looniversity, they do want those episodes to have like emotional arcs and like, maybe not lessons, but like, you know, you want the character to kind of grow and change. And Jellystone, it's just chaos. And I think that like, it was really fun, because I worked on both those in the same year. It was really fun to do both, like something that was a little more like, that had a little more character plot growth. And then just like Jellystone, it's like, what insane idea can you come up with? What will be funny? What's making us laugh in the room? So yeah, I like that both those shows exist.
I loved how you described it as chaos, because like, that show is, it's like playful chaos is how I would describe it. But yeah, and totally, like, it's irreverent and it doesn't really care about plot, but it's just got good vibes.
Yeah, the vibes, the Jellystone vibes are impeccable. I like, yeah, and I love how both these shows turned out. And I think that, like, it's great that both of them can, like, exist, you know, on the same network.
And I wanted to give a shout out to a friend of the podcast, Jenny Lorenzo, who voices a couple of characters on the show. She's Choo Choo, Bobby Louie, Spooky, Hardy Har Har, and Pixie.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Look out for her.
She's hilarious. Such a great voice cast on that show.
Yes.
I will say something that I tried to do in this season of Jellystone that we never were able to crack, that I absolutely will take a crack at again if, you know, they do another season and I work on it.
Fingers crossed.
That would be great. I know. Yeah, check out Jellystone. We would love to do more. I wanted to do an episode where Jabberjaw gets back together with her band.
Oh, yes.
The original Jabberjaw cartoon is very weird. It is a talking shark who lives in a bubble city with human teenagers. He talks like Curly from the Three Stooges, and they have a rock band. It's just the most random collection of things. But I really have a lot of love for it. And as a 90s ska kid, I was kind of obsessed with the Cartoon Network short that did a little ska song about Jabberjaw. Maybe not like technically a ska song, it's probably like more like a punk song with horns in it. So don't get at me in my mentions, people. I know the difference. But so I like that. So Jabberjaw kind of continued to live in my head because of those little shorts. So, and you know, in Jellystone, they like vaguely allude to her band in an episode that I didn't work on. Like, she remembers them as ghosts or something like that. And so I would come in to the writer's room basically every other day with a new pitch for how Jabberjaw gets back together with her band. And they didn't, and Carl didn't like any of them.
Oh, no.
He's a great dude to work with, and very nice and very open to collaboration. But for whatever reason, I could not get them to hook into one of these ideas where Jabber gets to get back together with her band. And, you know, I love like rock and roll movies, and, you know, I was like a punk kid, so I would love to like, you know, bring some of that energy into it. But yeah, we were never able to crack it. I think they're open to it. I think we could do a Jabber and her band episode in a future season, should that happen.
Fingers crossed that everybody flocks to that show and gives it some attention, because I agree. It takes a minute to like marinate in it, but definitely it's worth it. And you'll come out a more alive and overjoyed person with your daily life.
It's so funny. I dare anybody not to laugh watching Jellystone. It's such a treat. And they're 12-minute episodes. You can throw on a couple.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And so Jellystone is already out on Max, and soon will be on Cartoon Network if it's not already. And Tiny Toons University Season 2 is dropping at 9 a.m. on April 6th. So again, set your clocks for that. And I'm going to take it over to a new topic here. We're going to be discussing your new graphic novel, Youth Group. And yes, this is a really fun adventure, mystical, like kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but at church.
That's honestly a great pitch. That's a great way to describe it. Yes, thank you.
I found the humor to be, you know, relatable, honestly, between, you know, daughter and mom dynamics. You got friend dynamics, and they're going through certain things, and it's just evolving until you get to a spiritual exorcism that has to take place. So can you talk a bit about writing for a graphic novel as opposed to writing for an animated series? And like, what's the difference between that?
Yeah. So a Youth Group I did with a great artist named Bowen McGurdy, whose work you know from the series Spectre Inspectors, if you're a YA comics fan. And ooh, they've done some Marvel as well. And yeah, so like, comics are pretty collaborative, right? So you're working with the artist, and I think that like in certain schools of thought, the writer should be kind of like second banana to the artist, right? Like as the writer you're there to kind of set them up for their, you know, to succeed in the ways that you know, you're kind of there to set them up to be the best they can be. And I sure, really like that school of thought. I really like, you know, kind of, what can I write that will support them? What can I write that like lets them show off? What can I write that like is not too much of a pain in the ass? Like crowd scenes. Can I write something without a bunch of crowd scenes? And of course you have like an editor. We had a great editor on Youth Group, Ben Wilgus, who is a great comics writer himself. And cool. Yeah, so like that's kind of your team. And like, you know, and you want to collaborate, but like compared to an animation show, that is a very small team. Like for an animated show, like there's so many people working on it. And I think, you know, like when you're doing comics, you want to give that artist, you know, space to shine, and you want to help them to, you know, turn out the best product they can. But with animation, there's like a dozen other people that you want to do that for. So like your story editor, for instance, like on Luniversity, it was Allison Becker. It's like, how can I help her bring this idea to light? And like, she's kind of like supporting Aaron, and there's the directors and the storyboard artists. So it's kind of like, and you know, with animated shows, you're not always in the same room together. Like it's pretty piecemeal, right? Like I've done some shows where like the writers get together with the board artists and the board artists get together with the directors, but those are kind of fewer and farther between these days. So yeah, I think they're both group efforts, but like graphic novels, your group is much, much smaller. So fewer ideas, fewer cooks. It can kind of be a little more like of a vision, but with like animated shows, like there's just more cooks and more ideas, and like oftentimes that creates, but also just you have to know that there's like a lot of people who want to have a say. So yeah, I think that's the big difference. So
that's a good description. I would also think that a animated series is like a train, you know, and like it's pulling people on and people are getting off, and but it's still going. It's like full speed ahead, you know, and for your own project, you're kind of out there in the back pushing, you know, trying to get the train to make its destination. Yeah. So we've already pitched the book, but do you want to tell the listeners what the crux of the book is about? And like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Buffy the Vampire Slayer at Church is a great pitch. I don't feel like I need to say much else about it, but I will. It is a YA horror comedy. It's about teenage exorcists. So it is about a kid whose parents force her to go to a goofy youth group. And she finds out that these goofballs who, you know, sing parody songs and talk about abstinence have to do actual exorcisms. So you have this skeptic, this non-believer who has to kind of team up with these hyper believers to fight monsters and demons. So yeah, like obviously Buffy was a big inspiration. Shaun of the Dead was a big inspiration, like how you do a horror thing that is kind of has a lot of character based jokes, but also like a real horror plot in it. Yeah.
And when the main character finds the friend tied up in the garage, I immediately thought of Shaun of the Dead, by the
way.
So that was a one-to-one it came across.
Oh, good, good. Yes, I know. I love that movie. So yeah, any comparison to Shaun of the Dead, I think is flattering. Yeah, and I had a ton of fun doing it. Bowen is like such a great artist. You know, we were talking about like how far an expressive character goes, but Bowen's characters have such beautiful acting. Like the jokes in it land well because those characters are like acting the emotion. And I think that like I can't wait for people to see these characters. They're so fun and real. And yeah, really, like, comedy's a little tougher in graphic novels. I think you don't see a ton of like funny comics. Like,
right.
It's rare. And I think that it's just a little bit tough because, you know, you don't have timing and like, yeah, there's just some challenges with it. But I think like Bowen is such a great artist, and like those characters just are so expressive. And I think that, yeah, hopefully the like comedy lands because of that. And yeah, it is available for pre-order now. We love a pre-order. Yeah, and I was like a youth group kid growing up. I know I've mentioned that I've been a couple of kind of kids, but aren't we all? We're all a lot of different kinds of kids. Yeah, so I was a youth group kid and always like thought it was a very funny world, this world of like, we're religious, but we're also kind of cool, right? Like we go to, you know, band concerts and we hang out and watch movies. Like, so I loved that attitude. I think it's such a funny, weird attitude. And it's never a world that I saw like expressed in media that well. Like I never saw, you know, teen church or youth group like represented well in media. So I don't know. I'd always kind of wanted to tell a story in that world, and the idea of making them exorcisms just kind of came. And that's kind of where the germ of the idea was born.
Well, it's a fun idea, and I think it's executed really well. You have, again, as you said, expressive faces and really fun, lively drawings with these characters, and the way that the story progresses is just really energetic, and it leaves you on the edge of your seat as you're flipping the page. And like, I can't wait for people to read this as well again. And that is available for pre-order currently and comes out July 16th in stores and digitally. Yes. In the young adult fiction section. So look out for it there. It's called Youth Group. What a great title.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And the cover is gorgeous, too. If you want to take a look at it, bit.ly/youthgroupbook is a little link. And you got all those pre-order links and you can see the gorgeous cover, a couple of the pages. Yeah, no, I'm excited for folks to check it out. And again, we love a pre-order. Do I know why? Not exactly, but we do. So if it sounds like a cool idea, we love a pre-order.
Fantastic. So, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find you online?
Yes, I'm out there at Jordan David Morris on Instagram, and I'll just shout out that book link one more time, bit.ly/youthgroupbook. You got all your info there. I'm excited to check it out. And thank you so much for having me. God, what a fun chat.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for coming on. And you can follow the podcast over at This Means Pod on Twitter and This Means Podcast over on Facebook and Instagram, where I am posting daily anything that has to do with Looney Tunes or any updates within Warner Animation. You will find it there. Bill Hader was currently cast as Cat in the Hat in a new animated movie. So like, that's going to be wild. But yeah, follow us on social media to stay up to date on all things in the Looniverse. And as always, that's not all, folks.